Welcome to the Court of Appeals, January 27. I'll ask the marshal to please introduce the panel.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Werke, and Judge Halbrooks, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
And welcome. We are proceeding remotely, of course, and you should be able to see the clock in the corner of your screen somewhere. If for some reason we have any technological interruptions, the marshal knows to stop until we're reconnected and you can resume. We do ask that each of you identify yourself, your name for the record when you begin. We'll note too that we are recording this proceeding, and so it will be available on the Judicial Branch's website within 24 hours, so no other recording is allowed by either counsel or participants that are joining us today. And the first matter of two that we have scheduled for oral argument today is A211004, State of Minnesota, which is the respondent, Courtney Jean Peterson, appellant. And so as soon as counsel for appellant is ready, you may identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Donovan. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Courtney Peterson. Minnesota law provides that before a district court can revoke probation, it must make three findings. First, that a specific condition was violated. Second, that violation was intentional or inexcusable. And third, that the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation. I raised four issues in my brief. My argument today is going to focus on the first three, which touch on all three of those Austin factors. First, the district court abused its discretion when it found violation for nonpayment of restitution, when it also found that Ms. Peterson was paying restitution. Second, the district court abused its discretion when it found that this was an intentional and inexcusable violation without making the express finding that there was a willful failure to pay or attempt to pay. And finally, the district court abused its discretion in its ultimate decision because it revoked probation without properly exercising its discretion and considering all the options available to it. Its decision was based on an erroneous view of the law.
For hey, Mr. all these Donovan, reasons, can you sure. hear me?
Yes.
For some reason, I think you were the lawyer that argued on the Sarah Saline case. If it doesn't ring a bell with you, then you weren't.
I don't think it was, Your Honor.
The Sarah Saline case was a revocation proceeding. I wrote the opinion, and I think this is what bothers me about the case that we're arguing today. I wrote the opinion because, frankly, probation didn't do anything until the 12th hour when they went, oh no, the defendant, the appellant, is going to be off of probation, and jurisdiction was challenged. But Soline was a little bit different because they had not even started the revocation proceedings until a couple of weeks after probation had expired. The report had been filed. So in any way, are you arguing that because, you know, you were on the brink 30 days of probation being satisfied, that the court holding a hearing after the fact loses jurisdiction?
It's not my argument. Obviously, if the court wanted to reverse on those grounds, I certainly wouldn't argue with you.
But I won't speak for my panel mates, but I've seen a lot of cases lately where, whether it's COVID related or whether it's illness of attorneys, but a revocation notice is filed and then ultimately the defendant appellant will deny. And by the time we get around to these hearings, you know, probation has expired. And I'm concerned about that. Now, this is just me being very, I don't want to be very critical, but it sounds like I am. It seems to me that if probation sees someone not making their $15 a month payment as your client was required, that you would notify the court and not wait until shortly before probation is going to expire. I mean, you either have a history or you don't. So is there any response you can give to that? I don't get it. I don't know if that's a wave out there or what's happening.
I agree, and I certainly share your concerns as well, Your Honor. I think, you know, as far as you were saying, they should have notified the court. I think the court was notified back in 2018 at the early discharge because it was the judge who said, I'm not going to because there's non-payment of restitution. If that's true, bring a violation. And no one did anything for a long period of time.
It was also Judge Churchwell, although Judge Bass the sentence.
That's correct. Judge Churchwell denied the early discharge. And when I was initially reviewing this case, I did have thoughts about bringing the timeliness issue, because not only is it the 11th hour, but the 609.135 has a specific timeline just for restitution that says if restitution isn't paid, you need to actually bring this to the court's attention 60 days before expiration, not just a reasonable amount of time. There's actually a timeline. The reason I ultimately didn't bring that argument in candor to the court is that there was later a timely violation filed for the maintaining contact that was filed within the period. I certainly have the concerns about the timeliness here. I think that is maybe something to consider. And I also think that that factored into the district court's ultimate decision in this case to maybe sort
of. But then as far as the ultimate decision is concerned, my reading of the record is that your client did acknowledge that she had not kept contact with the PO, right?
That's correct.
And I can't tell from the record, wasn't she like on the lam for a while or gone? I know she was having a relapse and that was a concern to her, but can you tell me about how long she was unavailable?
It's a little unclear because also playing in the background, as the district court acknowledged, is that this is in South Dakota during COVID.
Right.
And so the failure to call in was in July. This is sort of my understanding. She tries calling in August. And at that point, they had sent it back to Minnesota because she missed the July call in. She didn't quite know who to talk to. At some point, she's arrested in South Dakota.
I understand all of her reasons and her rationale because she had relapsed. But isn't that in and of itself, Mr. Donovan, a basis to revoke probation? I'm kind of going on the flip side now because she hadn't kept contact with her agent. So sure, it's one item, but isn't that enough for a court in its discretion to revoke probation and do the balancing?
A couple different responses to that. First, to just sort of finish out your last one, part of the problem was that she was getting picked up in South Dakota, but Minnesota wasn't transporting her back. So it's sort of unclear where she was because of COVID. They weren't taking anyone in from out of state. So she was sort of in another role. As far as the relapse and being out of contact, I wouldn't disagree that there is a violation for not contacting your agent. I don't know that the relapse could be a reason for revoking because that wasn't a violation that was brought. But as far as that being a reason, yes, it could be a reason. And I can sort of see where the district court is coming from when it's making its decision by saying, you know, essentially, I can't let you get away with this. I need to do something. And it would be a basis for revocation. The problem with the district court's decision is it didn't consider everything it could do.
Okay, but now wait a minute. I'm just trying to feed up what we have. So we have that admission that she hadn't kept in contact with the probation agent. But then we also have evidence that, in fact, the restitution was not paid in full. And I'm not saying she wasn't paying on it, but it wasn't paid in full. You'll acknowledge that, right? So we have two violations.
I will acknowledge that it was not paid in full. And there's a way the district court could have found violation. But what the district court's specific finding is that she's paying for over 2 years and she did not make significant efforts to pay it. If the district court had phrased this as, I'm finding violation because the total amount isn't paid, which is a condition, it's a different story. I don't know if I can raise this. What the district court found is you paid for slightly over 2 years, but it wasn't enough for me. And so it takes us to a subjective standard. I agree that not paying the entire amount could have been a basis, but that wasn't what the district court found. What the district court found here was that it just wasn't enough. It wasn't sufficient without articulating what that amount would have been. And so I don't know how a district court can say, I'm finding that you're paying restitution, but I'm finding you in violation for not paying restitution. I think it has to be sort of one or the other. I think what that links into as well then is that not only is it just failure, it's clear that restitution is treated a little differently. So the district court needs to make an express finding that you could have been paying more and you weren't, or you were just flat out refusing to pay. And we don't have that finding by the district court. That's an express finding that the court has to make. That's actually an obligation that is on the court. It's still the state's burden, but I think Bearden is pretty clear that the court must inquire into the reasons for this payment, and it needs to find some information to support the decision that there was a willful non-failure to pay.
Mr. Donovan, I'm going to follow up a couple of questions on a similar, well, at least in part, a feat, following up Judge Berkey's question to you. The judge used the phrase tolling, didn't cite anything in particular, and I may have heard that phrase before. And part of your argument is the judge did not believe there was an option of extending probation. By your client's argument, I assume you're at least implicitly agreeing, even though probation had expired, you must agree with that phrase told, because if the court would have to have probation to extend. And so your client's arguing the judge should have extended probation, even though, if I understand correctly, time-wise, probation had ended, but the judge used the phrase tolling. So do you agree by that, at least, and maybe that's part of why you stopped your own consideration of the timing argument, you were instead arguing the court had room to extend probation. That's my first question. The second question, I'm confused by the restitution, because there was a payment somewhere alluded to a payment early on, but then it was transferred to South Dakota. And my understanding is they did absolutely nothing regarding restitution the entire time she's in South Dakota. So it automatically went to collections. And so that's been the sole method of enforcing restitution by either probation in either state. Is that an accurate summary of the record?
I think that's pretty accurate, Your Honor. I think what happened was yeah, there was that payment. Something was happened. The judge made everyone aware of that when it denied early discharge in 2018, and then payments began at that point. So as far as the finding of violation, the district court wasn't finding violation based on non-payment from 2015 to 2018. It was the sufficient efforts.
So on that point, are you surmising, I don't know if it's clear in the record, that court administration initiated the collections process at that same point? The judge looked at the file and said, gee, there's no payment or restitution. So it was handed off, and presumably that process just started. And so she started, money came out from the Department of Revenue around that same time.
I'm sort of inferring that. I'll be honest that my knowledge of how this, my knowledge of money in general, but my knowledge of money in the court isn't the best. But I think sort of, if you look at the timing, because I believe it was in January that the court denied it, and it was in June of 2018 that payment started. So that seems like a reasonable timeline. And as to just sort of turn to your first question about tolling, I think the initial talk of tolling was about the late addition of a violation that ultimately he found no violation of. But it is my argument that sort of once the time has stopped, apologize for accidentally muting myself. Before probation has expired, that there's essentially, you have up to 6 months before probation expires to file a violation. And as long as you do that, you have all the options available to you. And so the first violation for restitution, again, not necessarily timely for restitution. That's not my argument today. The second, the first addendum that added the maintaining contact, that was timely filed. That was in September, a couple of weeks before probation expired. But in theory, they had all the way, I guess, to March to file something. And once you file it, that's sort of where the tolling starts. And then you have all those options available to you. So the district court, yes, could have extended her on probation. That was actually Ms. Peterson's lawyer's first ask. It was, I think,
that was your request then. So here we are now, and we're a reviewing court, and maybe we would not have done the same thing as far as someone in violation of probation. But what is it you want us to do with this now? I mean, send it back and have the judge reconsider other options, because probation has now expired. I mean, what do you see happening from the appellate court?
I would ask it, and again, I've raised a lot of issues that all have sort of different remedies. But I think you still need to hit, you know, one or two would knock the other ones out. But either way, what we're asking for, at least on 1 through 3, is returning this to the district court and asking it to reconsider its decision. And I think that the district court, because it could have at the time extended probation, I don't know why it couldn't now extend.
I have to jump in. What do you mean reconsider? If we send something back, if we reverse and we remand, what are we telling the judge to do to change his mind? I mean, we're in kind of a difficult position here in terms of what authority we have in our standard of review.
Sure. I think that with the standard of review, I'm going to take option three and sort of just focus on that, on whether or not it can extend probation. I think what I would ask this court to hold in that regard is that the district court abused its discretion because its decision was based on the erroneous view that it could not extend probation. So reverse that decision, remand it back to district court to consider that in light of this court's opinion. And then on that reconsideration, the district court could consider extending probation as an option here.
Mr. Donovan,
sure.
Isn't that inconsistent with the district court's statement that to extend probation, it would unduly depreciate the seriousness of this violation? I mean, it just seems to me like it would be, since the court has already said that, that would be not something that it would consider to be appropriate.
That was
really the basis for its ultimate decision.
Sure. And I see my time is about to run out. Could I just briefly respond to that question?
You may, Mr. Donovan. Thank you.
Before it gets to that point, on page 46, when it's getting to its ultimate decision and it's going to start walking through sort of the sub-factors of Austin Factor 3, it says probation has expired. I can cut her loose with time served, or I can execute the sentence. Those are my only three options. I can't put her back on probation. When it comes time for that decision, I think that, just realistically speaking, if you think your only options are discharging from probation or executing the sentence, it makes sense to me to have a court say it would unduly depreciate the seriousness if I don't. But I think it changes the calculus if you have another option, because it's essentially she gets off sort of scot-free here or she executes the sentences. Would that unduly depreciate the seriousness if you just have that binary choice? Yes, that makes sense to me. But I think if you have a third option of, you know what, I actually have all of my tools in 609.135. I can extend probation. I can order a sanction. I can order some other things. Then I don't know if you're unduly depreciating if you don't execute the sentences, because you have those other tools to ensure accountability and to provide a sanction.
Thank you.
At this time, we would just ask that you would reverse, and I would save everything else for rebuttal.
Very well, and you will indeed have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Tara Almanic, and I'm Assistant Douglas County Attorney, and I'm appearing on behalf of the state of Minnesota in this case. At the outset, the appellant argues that she did not fail to pay restitution because after nearly 3 years of being placed on supervised probation, the Department of Revenue collected debt payments from the appellant with principals totaling $541.66. The appellant had failed to pay the victim in this case, and the debt went to collections. I mean, if every time a defendant who is on probation fails to pay restitution and that restitution in turn goes to collections is not considered a violation of probation, it would pretty much eliminate any consequence for a defendant's failure to pay restitution. In this case, the appellant made one payment of $20.83 in June of 2020 before absconding from probation. And the restitution to the victims in this case of approximately $9,155 has not been paid.
Here's what I thought with Ms. Almanic. Almanic, thanks. Emphasis on the manic. Okay. That wasn't a pun. This is what, to me, it just seems like shoddy probation work. How can you bring a petition to a court to discharge her early from probation when you're saying she hadn't been? I just feel like probation dropped the ball and they supervised her when they had to and they didn't give her a lot of guidance. Why would there have been a request to have her discharged early if she wasn't doing everything she was supposed to do, or as far as she knew what she was supposed to do?
It's my understanding that she was on probation in the state of South Dakota. And
right, I'm not blaming Minnesota. Yes. I'm saying South Dakota looks like, you know, they thought, she comes from another another state, let's just, you know, pass her through.
I think it's clear that the appellant knew her obligation to pay restitution. And I think she had other pending cases in Minnesota where she was also obligated to pay restitution. And I think it's easy, you know, to say, well, probation has the obligation to make sure that the appellant is following through with the conditions of probation. But I would, the state would assert in this case that the appellant knew very well that she had an obligation to make restitution payments. And I believe it was only $15 a month. So it was a pretty low burden on her part that she knew that as long as she was making those payments, and I think she signed probation agreements where she knew that was her obligation. And then she did not do that. Instead of doing that, it wasn't just that she wasn't staying in contact with probation. She was actually acquiring additional theft charges in South Dakota that were pending during this hearing that was heard before the court. She was not focusing on rehabilitating and serving the public by paying her restitution, by obtaining employment, by being a productive member of society. She was actually, unfortunately, continuing with the same behaviors that resulted in the case before the court. It wasn't just that she wasn't paying restitution. I believe based on the record, the district court record, the district court found that she was willfully absconded from probation, continued using illegal controlled substances, and also acquired 5 new criminal charges, including a high-level theft.
Ms. O'Mag, just to clarify, excuse me, I understand the judge did not find a violation based on the new offenses, so narrowed it to the restitution and absconding. Is that correct?
I believe so, but I think he did include, for purposes of deciding disposition in the case, that her reasoning for not complying with the conditions of probation being intentional and inexcusable was, you know, she wasn't in rehabilitation or trying to do something to better herself. She was committing additional charges, crimes in South Dakota.
And when I read the record, the judge's decision, it really does seem like restitution was a big issue for the judge, which tied into the depreciation or deprecation of the, if not executing. So it seemed like money and non-paying restitution. But I have a question regarding, you mentioned too, again, the $15, was that in a probation agreement? So it would have traveled with her to South Dakota that you must pay $15? Because later it seemed like it was very, I think I saw a phrase that no amount was met. And so the concern I have from the record is the judge made a reference to that she didn't testify as to her ability, and yet it's the state's obligation to show she has an ability. And it seems like anytime we're dealing with money, and most of the individuals that we see have a public defender, obviously can't pay $9,000 or $29,000 at any one time. So it's usually a monthly payment. And if here, and it's also my understanding that the collections process, which our judicial branch loves because it happens automatically. My recollection is when there's a non-payment, perhaps even 60 days, and that's why I'm assuming there was some notice when the judge looked at the request to have her discharged from South Dakota, saw the restitution, that it probably went to court administration and the collections process began. It almost strikes me that that's the remedy the state is now pursuing, because probation doesn't do anything thereafter about restitution or about $15. So I've got a couple questions, but that $15, where did that exist? Was it in a probation agreement that followed with her?
My recollection, and I may be incorrect because the file is quite voluminous. My recollection, that was part of the sentencing order with Judge Batty, and I may be misspeaking, but I believe when I reviewed that, I think that was a condition that the judge set forth in the sentencing order, was the $15. Because I don't believe that we have any paperwork from South Dakota regarding, I mean, I think she assigned an initial agreement. It could have been a probation agreement too. It's either the sentencing order or a probation agreement that she signed before she was transferred to South Dakota, based on my recollection.
It was just for our panel's benefit, Judge Batty did order that amount to be paid monthly.
Am I correct, Ms. Almanic? Then once collections process, it's a civil collections process. So long after she's discharged, the Department of Revenue, if it's renewed every 10 years, can continue to collect restitution for all the counties that she's owes money.
That is correct.
So the point about that, you mentioned earlier about the obligation will still continue on whether or not she makes a separate payment in addition to the one the Department of Revenue. That's how restitution is being collected for the victims. I understand here it didn't make it yet to the Douglas County victims, it's going to other victims, and then presumably ultimately to however the Department of Revenue must have prioritized maybe age-wise, but she'll continue to be obligated long after she's served her prison sentence or even if the court had discharged her.
I do agree with the court, and I do agree with your analysis regarding that. And after carefully reviewing the court's findings as to why the court did decide to revoke probation in this case, I think that based on the record, it wasn't just restitution payments. The court specifically also found that because she absconded from probation and was continuing with illegal activities rather than trying to make some type of effort to pay her restitution obligation to make all the victims in Minnesota whole, even the ones beyond this case, I think that that's why the court did what it did in this case based on my review of the record. And that was completely within the district court's discretion to make that determination. I don't know if that answers the question.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Were you finished?
Yes.
All right, here's my question. So if probation expired in 2020, the violation hearing is then heard or decided in 2021, do we have a jurisdictional issue as far as a remedy? How can you send something back? If we agree with the appellant, we sent it back and said, at least let us know that you've considered other options. If we buy into that, probation has expired. So where is jurisdiction going to come from?
Well, I think my recollection of the statute is I believe because she absconded and she was on warrant status that did toll the probation violation.
Absconding. Thank you.
Yes. And that did toll the probation violation, and the court did state on the record, and I did note that in my brief, that it believed it could not extend probation for purposes of allowing the appellant to pay restitution. My further review of the record is
how do we know, you know, we're looking at paper writing as far as a transcript. How do we know Churchwell isn't going, I just can't put you back on probation? You know, in other words, it's futile, it's worthless. I mean, we don't know that. How do we make that distinction?
Well, I just based it on his factual findings of the record that I don't think it was, well, I have no other option but to have the appellant go to prison in this case because the district court cannot extend probation. The district court was very specific in its findings that she absconded, she was committing additional offenses in South Dakota and continued to use drugs instead of following conditions of probation. So for purposes of protecting public safety, the court made his decision. I don't think that it was whether or not he could extend probation if he didn't believe that it would not unduly depreciate the seriousness of the offense. I think the court would have probably just closed the file and stated that the state did not meet its burden of proof. But because the court did not do that, and there's specific findings that assert and back up the district court's decision to revoke probation and commit the appellant to the Department of Corrections, there was no abuse of discretion in this case, and there's just sufficient findings on the record to support what the district court decided in this case.
Ms. Olmanic, it does seem, and I think Mr. Donovan in his brief quoted the language of the judge. I can't remember the exact language. It seemed like the judge narrowed down the options he thought he had. Is that a fair reading of what the judge said? Meaning the judge seemed to disregard an extension because he didn't think he had the ability. And if that is true, it certainly then would make more sense, of course, that it would depreciate, as Mr. Donovan points out, if you only have an option of serving some local jail time and then being discharged versus extending up to another 5 years. Now you've got those three options. But is that an accurate, am I reading the record correctly? And the quote, I think Mr. Donovan in his brief about what the judge said regarding extension, that was not an option?
My recollection of being in the hearing is that was not the district court's focus on the in the case, and that if the court did not think it was a serious violation, it was just a matter of missing a few payments of restitution and the appellant was making a good faith effort. My recollection was the court had very specific findings saying the appellant didn't do much of anything, went on probation to rehabilitate and become a productive member of society. Her focus instead was to not communicate with probation, to continue to use illegal substances and continue to obtain additional criminal cases. And that was the reason why the court sentenced the appellant to prison instead of whether or not he had the ability to extend probation. I believe if he did not think that it was that serious of offense and it was just it was poor and struggling to pay restitution. I'm not seeing anything from the record that the district court just said, well, I have no other choice. And I don't think that these violations are that serious. So I'm just going to send appellant to prison. I think it's completely supported by the record. And he was very specific in his reasoning as to why he did revoke probation. The needs for confinement outweigh the policies favoring probation, that her behaviors are a huge public safety risk. And that's why he made the decision he made.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Almanic.
Thank you.
And counsel for appellant, you will now have 5 minutes and you may proceed.
Thank you. Just a couple brief points. First of all, just what we were talking about, I think it's very explicit that the court believed it could not put Ms. Peterson back on probation. On page 46 of the transcript, probation has expired. I mean, it's either cut or loose with credit for time served. I arguably could give her another sanction of county jail sanction, or I have to execute the sentence. I think those are my only three options. I can't put her back on probation. I think it's pretty clear that the court did not believe that was available. Sort of to a point that Judge Werke was making earlier, this might be a different case if Judge Churchwell had said, even if I could, I wouldn't do it. Even if I had the ability, I don't think that you're a candidate for it. But there's nothing suggesting that. He immediately discounts that option that he has before him.
However, Mr. Donovan, he does, in the course of his discussion of these facts and his ruling, he talks about, the second chance issue. And I mean, you even argued in your brief, this was a reflexive reaction to a comment that Judge Batty had made originally. And therefore this was like, you've failed and you've now had a second opportunity, which you failed at. So there seems some inconsistency there. I don't think it's quite as clear cut as it is portrayed by saying, I don't have an option to extend probation.
Well, I think the court's words show that, though. He doesn't believe that he can do it because he thinks it's expired. I grant that he's definitely going back to the idea of no second chances, which, as I argue in my brief, I don't think is correct anyway. The idea that you get a departure doesn't mean that then you can't be continued on probation. That's not based in law. I think maybe sort of another thing that tends to get forgotten by everyone, myself included, is that we're talking about Ms. Peterson as if she's done nothing but fail on probation. Ms. Peterson was on probation for 4 years and 11 months before the first violation was filed. I'm not going to act like she was paying restitution that whole time because clearly she wasn't for 2018, but there were no other violations. I think it's erroneous. And I think the district court judge sort of ignored the long period of success that she did have on supervision. I want to make one final point, sort of Judge Werke, back to what we were talking about before, is what do we do? Probation has expired. I think that she could still be put back on probation because it had expired then too, but they still had that authority. 609.14 says, as long as that first thing is timely, as long as you file that within 6 months of probation expiring, you can have the hearing afterwards. That doesn't matter when that happens. It has to be a reasonable time, which we're not challenging now, but you can have it at any point and you have all those options available to it. That's what Sagatow says. And nothing in that says, oh, except an option you have is you can't extend probation because it's done. And so if this court were to reverse, because the district court at that point still had the authority to place Ms. Peterson back on probation, I think when this court would reverse that decision, even though it's expired now, we're putting her back in that moment of time. And we're putting the decision back in that moment when the district court still had jurisdiction to place her on probation. So I think that would be a remedy now as well. So unless the court has any further questions, we would just ask that you reverse and remand.
It appears there's no other questions. So thank you both, counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today and your briefing. We will now take the matter under advisement and issue a ruling within the 90-day period.